Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The temperatures are dropping, and of course, humans need heat. This hour, we're going to talk about some of the sources we turn to for temporary heating or supplemental heating, the good, the bad, the downright dangerous. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, and of course, he'll also be answering your questions. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or call us 866-780-9100. Let's start by talking about space heaters, because I think that when we get cold, a lot of us want an easy, affordable fix for that. And I know that space heaters can really cause a lot of trouble. So give me your cautionary words when we think, oh, I need a space heater.
Yeah. Well, back in, you don't remember this, but let's say back in the 70s and 80s when it was, you know, we had kind of an energy crunch of some sort. We, would get kerosene heaters. And that was kind of a big thing for a long time, as every house had a kerosene heater in their living room. And people were kind of wondering why their walls were maybe getting a little bit dirty from the soot. And they may be a little bit too humid in the room, see more moisture on the windows, things like that. And we started to learn that, any time that you burn a fossil fuel, especially inside for temporary heat, because you're trying to save some money, which almost inevitably we never did, but we thought we were. But when you burn a fossil fuel, there's always going to be some carbon monoxide. I mean, that's just the way it is. And, when you do that, of course, you're compromising your health. But especially when it's a liquid, say like some will use like a liquid propane or a kerosene, something like that. Since it's a liquid, you're going to get extra moisture inside the house as well. And, that causes all kinds of issues as well. But there's so many, gases in that combustion process that are not good for people at all. And so, we need to really think about that. You see so many advertisements for these little heaters. They'll say, oh, it can heat your, like a living room or something like that. These little, sometimes they're a little propane heater. You might buy those little 1 pound tanks that go to them. And they're always, if you really look on the fine print, they'll always say they're an outdoor heater for one thing. And they will, always say never use in a closed room, which means you have to always have ventilation. And I'm going to kind of skew since I was kidding with you yesterday about, hey, let's talk about ice shacks. And, it's kind of the same thing. People are outside, they use a temporary heater to keep themselves warm in an ice shack. And even when you're outside, you got to remember you're in a closed space. And so if you think your house is leaking and it's going to give you enough air, in a room to have enough ventilation to run one of these.
Bill, you're fading out on me again. So I don't know if you, you moved
I'm
there.
Sorry.
Okay, you're back.
Is that better?
Yep, that is better.
Okay. All right, I'm sorry. Yep, I wish I could have been there today, but...
next time.
Yes, will be next time.
Right, so you were talking about, even when you're outside, ostensibly, if you're in an ice shack, that's still a space where the air quality can be impacted.
It can. It really can. And you're always, it's a bad thing. You're always reading in a newspaper or, a sports magazine or something like that, any outdoor news. There's always someone that, suffers the effect of carbon monoxide in an ice shack every year, and some people pass away from that. Because the outdoor heaters, those little ones, let's say a lot of them, they're called like a Mr. Heater. And they're about, when you start looking at heaters, and almost every ice fisherman or outdoors person knows what I'm talking about, they're just kind of a walk around like a little cassette radiant propane heater. They can run on little 1 pound tanks or a 20 pound tank, hook it up. And they have an oxygen sensor on them. If you bump it with your leg, they'll shut off. And they're very safe for what you're doing as long as you have ventilation. You know, open a window, you know, to let some fresh air in. Of course, people will go, why would I open a window if I'm trying to heat the room? And, well, you still always have to have fresh air coming in for that combustion. The one thing about the temporary heaters is those aren't too bad, like, say, for a garage. A lot of people will use, like, the one Mr. Heater, I think it's called a Big Buddy. They're temporary, like I say. They'll heat an insulated garage as long as you keep a little window open. They're pretty good. I mean, they really are for what you're doing. But some will buy, they call them sunflowers, and you see these sometimes outside at restaurants. They're kind of shaped maybe like a 12-inch diameter, and it does kind of look like a big sunflower. They give off a lot of heat, but they're the worst thing you can put in a halfway enclosed space. Those would definitely be outside. You would never, you know, put them in a garage or in a room or really in an ice shack. They're just basically made for outside. You know, something like if you go to restaurants now, you know, especially even with the social distancing, with the temperatures kind of changing a little bit, you'll see these maybe 6 foot tall propane or natural gas heaters at standard, you know, maybe heat up around tables and picnic tables and things like that. It's basically the same as that sunflower style. They give off a lot of heat, but you would definitely never put those in a room or a garage or anything like that.
All right. So even if you, I think a lot of us want to do more and more things outside where we think that there's
right.
plenty of ventilation, but just yep. don't take a chance like that. I want to talk a little bit about, of course, electric space heaters as well, because,
yep.
you know, that's something that doesn't have the same kind of off-gassing problems. And yet you can also do some pretty serious damage to your electric bill with an electric space heater, right?
Yeah. You know, you're there for a while. Remember those little heaters, you know, that you'd see them on like Picture Magazine, you know, mm-hmm. if you bought one of these heaters, they'd throw in the cabinet and, you know, a $500 cabinet and all this. And they were kind of the rage for a few years. And I was talking with an energy auditor, I remember on a project, and this was a few years ago when they were the big rage. And he said before he would even go into a house, all he had to do was look at the previous month's energy bills, maybe compare them to the year before. And he could tell you how many of those space heaters, electric space heaters, were in there because of the high extra electrical use they were getting, even if they were trying to close rooms off. You know, that was kind of a thing. Well, we're not using those two rooms, let's close them off, shut the doors, and keep that heater, let's say, in the living room. And yeah, they would just hit you pretty hard on the electric bill. I have an electric heater, that small electric heater that I have in my garage. And oh boy, if I run that for 5 or 6 days in a month, you know, I'm in big trouble here in the house. So they do chew up a lot of electricity, but you know, at least you don't have an open flame. But what some people will do too, even when they have, you know, they have their regular heating and cooling system, is they think, well, why don't I just run a piece of ductwork out into the garage and heat the garage with my house heating and cooling. And that is like absolute worst thing you can do. It's against every code there is. And if the insurance company ever found out about it, you know, you'd really be in trouble. It's very, very bad for indoor air quality or fire hazards or anything like that. But probably, you know, if you can, you know, if you're starting a project or getting a new model or building a new shop, you know, radiant floor heat is very, very good for, you know, permanent heat in a garage. But, you know, temporary heat, yeah, the electric ones are safe, but they cost you a lot. You can put in a gas, let's say a gas furnace, but you'd want that to be, you know, bringing fresh air from outside and ducting the gases out, not a natural draft type. But the downside there is if you're working in your garage and you have any gasoline or anything flammable, you know, you're risking the chance of an explosion. And there goes, you wouldn't want to use a wood furnace either in there because of the same thing, you know, a fireplace that you could possibly have an explosion. So the temporary heat issue, you know, sometimes is harder to do than, let's say, a house. You know, there's going to be a sacrifice somewhere. And so what a lot of people have done is they will buy a mini split heat pump that just to do their garage. And I know that's permanent, but they buy that unit, and you know, you can find them online, the do-it-yourself ones that do a garage for about $1,500. Well, you kind of look at, that's going to heat, it's going to air condition my garage, it's going to be safe, because how much are these propane tanks going to cost, especially this winter? You know, I can see some of these propane heaters, they'll go through one of those 20-pound tanks in one day. Well, that's $16. So if you you know, maybe 16 or 20, depending where you have them refilled or replaced. You know, you could easily pay for a permanent solution for the cost that you're going to be paying for exchanging these propane tanks out. So it's, you know, you've got to just lay this out. But, you know, as far as what's going to cost, you know, to operate these and how often am I going to be operating it. But the biggest thing is the safety of them, and the carbon monoxide, that always scares me. That's why I'm a big all electric proponent.
All right, so it might be worth investing a little bit more up front. It sounds like what you're saying, Bill, is that almost none of the quick fix solutions that we might gravitate toward are safe and effective over time.
Yeah. And that's a good thing, because, you know, and I'm glad you said that, over time, because a lot of these temporary heaters, and they'll say, you know, you can, you know, they're safe in an open area. If they're knocked over a couple times, they may be operating at a completely different level on combustion and be a lot more unhealthy than they were when you bought it.
All right. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. You can join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is standing by. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. We've been talking about temporary heating solutions and some of the dangers of some of those quick fix solutions. He is standing by, however, to answer any of your questions about heating or really anything else on your home improvement to-do list. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's go to the phones, Bill. Donna is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hello, Donna.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Hello.
Yeah. Oh,
good morning. My question relates to overtime, like you were just referencing, and humidity in the house during the winter when you're running your furnace.
Right.
I had a humidifier put on the furnace 20 years ago, and it worked. Water on the inside of the windows, you know, you had to adjust to keep the moisture correct. Now it doesn't do that. So I have been looking to buy a humidifier and found that they now have this ultrasonic cool mist humidifier that is portable. It's not on the furnace anymore. So any suggestions, please, for humidity during the winter inside?
All right, Bill.
Now, is your house get really dry then in the winter?
It's a condominium.
It's a condominium,
1,400 feet. It's not that large.
Okay.
So I can go from room to room and be adequate.
Oh, okay.
It isn't like big place.
Okay, so, you know, does it get very dry there in the winter in the rooms?
I notice it, yes. Now it does. The last couple of years, the furnace humidifier did its job for 15, almost 20 years. And when I have a service, the person leaves and says, it's working. No, it's not working. So, not like it used to anyway. What do we do to get humidity into our dwelling places during the winter?
Donna says that the humidifier that was working with the furnace is not working as well anymore. She's got dry problems in her house. What are some of the ways that Donna and others could effectively get some humidity in their house without doing any damage?
Well, the thing is, you know, in most cases, if your house is especially a condominium like that, if it's dry, it means it's fairly leaky. Because in most new projects, we're trying to get rid of excess humidity. And so the downside to this is, I don't know what her starting relative humidity is inside the house. I mean, if it's around 30-some percent when it's cold, like, say, 35% or 30%, that's where it should be. If it's up there around 50, 60%, then it's too high. Everybody has a different comfort level for humidity, and I always kind of go by if there's moisture on the windows. If there's moisture on the windows, to me, it's either just about where it's supposed to be or it's too high, depending on the temperature outside. But yes, you can cause some issues with too high of humidity. You know, there's so much information out there now as far as for health that when the humidity is too low, you know, you can get different viruses and bacteria that get into your nasal cavities. And if it's way too high, it's the same thing. It just, attaches to the moisture in, let's say, you're in your nasal area as well. But you're going to have someone that's very familiar with indoor air quality put a new system in, probably. I wouldn't recommend the portable ones at all, because that can dump excess in an area where you don't want it, especially on some windows, and you get too much moisture and it starts to rot your windows out. And there's, you know, other things as well with mold spores. You know, there's all kinds of issues there. But I would find someone that's very familiar. You have are you in the Des Moines area?
Cedar Rapids.
I'm sorry. Yes, you have some very good indoor air quality people as far as heating and cooling in Cedar Rapids area. Find someone and you just go ahead and start contacting them. I need someone that's very familiar with proper relative humidity inside my dwelling. And if just hit it at that angle, that's what you want, is someone that, hey, I need someone to come out here and get the humidity where I want it, not with some numbers or national so-called experts or some goofball on the radio calling, you know, or just telling you. You want to see what your comfort level is. So someone that's going to be open-minded and ask that kind of question right up front.
All right. Well, Donna, thanks so much for your call. Bill, you're still kind of in and out a little bit,
man.
So I don't know what you do when you come through clear, but you probably don't know either. So we'll keep working on it.
I have no idea.
You sound good right now. Keep doing what you're doing.
We'll take care of it. I'll just come there next time. It's a lot easier.
All right. Here's a question from Deanna in Iowa City. She says, what can you tell me about add-ons to an existing furnace? I'm specifically thinking about a wood-burning furnace by a manufacturer such as Fire Chief, Shelter, or Caddy that I might add on to my existing gas furnace in the basement of my house. Is a wood-burning add-on safe? Would it help heat my old 1870s home? Is it possible to find a professional to install a wood-burning add-on furnace? And she adds that, I grew up in an old farmhouse with a very large wood-burning stove in the basement, and I'll never forget the warmth that rose through the wood floor and into the ground level of the home. I really miss that heat.
Yeah, you could probably find somebody to do it. First thing I do is call your insurance agent and find out how many times your insurance rates are going to double.
Okay, so that sounds...
I'm not either. Yeah, I they're nice, maybe for a shop or barn. I'm not a big fan because there's so many things that can go wrong. there's so many things that go wrong whenever you go with those systems. There's a lot of them around, especially in northern Minnesota. But no,
well,
I would
and there's
not,
a lot of
I wouldn't do
there's
it.
A lot of romance to it too.
Yeah.
I mean, you just love the heat, but
yep, there sure is. But you know, you can buy an electric fireplace and then turn the little heater on in there, and then you can see it and feel it and everything. It's a lot safer. But no, I wouldn't do it. That's me. I don't like the indoor air quality issues or safety issues with it.
All right. Well, we've got another wood burning stove question. This one is in a garage, so maybe you'll feel a little bit better about that. Chris is on the line in Mount Vernon. Hi, Chris. What's your question?
Yeah, so I built a nice shop. It's heated with in-floor heating, and so I'm glad you like that. I like to go out there, and I'd like to keep it above, like, freezing, but I want to go out there and work every once in a while. And someone gave me a nice Vermont casting stove, so really
Ooh,
nice quality stove.
Okay.
I put it in. I have a nice Class C chimney going up all the way. Everything's done to code. But I'd had a ton of derecho damage, and I lost a bunch of pine trees. And I've cut them all up and I've split them. And some people say, no, never burn pine. One thing about my chimney is it's super easy to clean. I can pop off the bottom outside and run a brush all the way up. And I was just wondering, is it safe to burn pine or is that just a no-no?
Well, you can burn it as long as it's dry. It's got to really be dry. And yeah, that's one reason, because of all the extra tar, especially when it's wet, you know, or not aged.
Okay.
Yeah, Minnesota, we call it gopher wood.
Mine is
you put in
time
pieces.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, mine
go
at
ahead.
The present time is not aged. Oh, mine at the present time is not aged. So I probably shouldn't burn it this winter. Probably wait till next winter. Is that what you're saying?
No. Yeah.
So a lot of it was just split like a few months ago.
Yeah. Yep. I would wait. I would wait. Now, I had a Vermont Castings Vigilant many years ago, and it was a very good heater. And I think they have a outside air intake capability on that. Does that one also come with a fan, that model that you got, or not?
Does not.
Okay.
Just make sure. That, very nicely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I had one that heated my house. But so, and see, that kind of everything I say, so you just kind of disregard what I just told you. But make sure that you have fresh air coming in for that.
Okay. All right. That's good to know. That was my next question. So I'm glad.
Yeah.
I was going to actually bring a pipe in from the outside right to the back of the stove where the fresh air comes in. So I was going to do that because it's right.
Yeah.
Right there. I can easily do it.
Yeah. They have on their website, I think it'll tell you exactly how to do it. And they may ask you to do a power damper fresh air intake. And you can find those online. I know. I think it's the field company, sells those, but, yeah, they make a really nice, 24 volt, fresh air intake damper. So they may require that for you too.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. I'll probably do that then.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Thanks a lot for the call, Chris. And I mean, Bill, that was definitely a do as I say, not as I do moment for you.
Oh, yeah.
But you've also tried pretty much everything in your life. So I think
yes.
I think you're going to have those moments constantly. That's my take on it.
I do have those moments. Yeah, I'm like right now, I'm thinking, God, I wish I had my flip phone right now.
Well, you're sounding good at the moment still, so we're doing fine. All right, let's go back to the phones. Tom is on the line in Mason City. Hi, Tom. Tom, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Woo-hoo.
Hi, Tom. What's your question?
Well, I was wondering, Bill had mentioned using a household-style furnace in a garage and the safety cautions there. But I was wondering if you used I was looking at my reuse store. They have a small BTU. I can't remember the BTUs, but it's a smaller furnace, high efficiency. I was wondering if you built a three-quarter drywall enclosure around it, if that would help. I do use some solvents when I'm working in my garage. So sometimes the vapors could be a concern.
Yeah, you know, that's the one thing that always scared me too, is just, you know, you never know when you're going to spill something. and the thing is too, is they're, you know, some of those units still, you know, they have a heat exchanger in them. So if that's cracked, you know, that just could possibly have an issue for, you know, fumes to get into the combustion area. That's the only, you know, the downside. Yeah, you could do a system like that. But boy, yeah, that would still scare me, you know, if you are using the solvents. And the only way that you may get away from it is you know, putting in a big overhead draft fan, something like you would see in a welding shop, you know, pulling the fumes up and out, or a paint shop, something like that. You'd really want to get with a heating and cooling guy, even though it's your own and everything, but just, you know, maybe run it by him. Or if you're in an area where there's a, you know, building inspector, just kind of run this particular scenario by them, that someone that can actually knows what type of a furnace it is exactly, because I can't really tell over the phone. But, you know, pull somebody in to verify that it's going to be okay. And they may be able to come up with some positive pressure issues to get those fumes out. Or you might have to just maybe have a little paint room off to the side, a pressurized paint room to handle just those solvents when you do.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Thanks.
All right.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call, Tom. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jim in Johnston says, I'm looking at replacing my furnace with a heat pump and backup gas furnace. What do you recommend?
Well, I like the heat pumps a lot. And yeah, you know, what a lot of them people are doing, now we have the cold climate heat pumps now. They're good. Most of them, like Mitsubishi, Daikin, Fujitsu, most of their cold climate heat pumps are good down to about maybe 15 below zero now. And so what some of the guys are doing, especially up in northern Minnesota or in northern Iowa, is they will, instead of having the gas backup, they'll do like baseboard heaters. They're pretty cheap. They're electric. They're not as efficient as the gas. But the thing is, they'll just set the thermostat on like the gas furnace as a backup. They'll set it maybe 5 degrees lower. Let's say you have the heat pump set at, you want to keep the house at, let's say 68 degrees. Set your backup, maybe it's 62 or 60. So when the heat pump isn't keeping up, the temperature drops down to that, then your secondary kicks in and helps it out. But if it's a sealed combustion gas furnace, no, that's fine. If you've already have one, that's fine. That's what I'm going to put in a couple, just like one or two baseboard heaters is all I'm going to put in for way up north. Cause the cold climate, some of the cold climate ones go where it's colder. The longer you wait, a couple more years, they're probably going to be good down to 25 below. Some of them are, I hear. So, but the heat pumps are by far the best way to go because they're like 250 to 300% efficient compared to a gas furnace.
All right. And we have a very, we'll try to do this question very quickly right before the break from Lisa in Ames. For an average size 2-car garage, what would you estimate the cost range of installing a mini split system?
Well, the one that I put in was $1,500. It was a do-it-yourself one. It took about 2 hours to put in. But it depends. If you hire someone, the costs, I cannot believe the range of costs of the HVAC guys on putting the same unit in. You know, it might be, say, $3,000 from one person. It might be $6,000 from another because they don't like them and they don't want to work on them. And there's always a whiner out there. I don't want to do it. Okay, then don't. I mean, I don't care.
So call around is what I hear you saying.
Yeah, call around. You bet. Find somebody that likes them, first of all. Hey, you like heat pumps or mini splits? They go, yeah, I love them. Okay, well, then you're my guy. Or lady.
All right. Good job. Good save there, Bill. All right, we're gonna take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is on the line today, and he is ready and willing to answer your questions. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Home Improvement Day today on Talk of Iowa. Our expert Bill McAnally is on the line, and he's answering your questions at 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We have a non-heat-related question from Mary. She says, I would like to remove the carpeting from my stairway and apply a natural finish to the wood. Is there a way to make it slip-proof without reapplying carpeting or adding stair treads?
Yeah, they have some granules that you put in the finish, almost like a fine silica sand that you can put in. That's one method of doing it. And what other people will do is put small strips. They're usually an adhesive type strip that kind of, I call them grabber strips, that you would put on top of the treads. But the I kind of like just incorporating a little bit of that grit into the final finish.
All right. Does it change the look?
No, not really. I don't think it does. No. If you go to, a woodworking store, a woodworking supply store, even paint stores, you can usually buy that because they added a lot to paints, especially paints that you will have like a garage floor or shop floor. And we used to put them in our paints for coming up a sidewalk. So, yeah.
All right. Here's a question from Lori in Waverly. We moved into a house that has a boiler system and a couple of added rooms that have electric baseboard heat. We try to use the baseboard heaters as little as possible, but 58 degrees does get chilly. Any temporary suggestions or ways to use these electric baseboard heaters efficiently?
No, they only do so much. They're only, at the best, 100% efficient. I've used them for temporary heat before. And, they're a little pricey to operate, especially if you're in an area that has a high electric rate. The best thing to do is somehow come back and relook at your whole system and try to get away from those as far as permanent heat. That's a really good place for a mini split, because you mini split heaters, mini split heat pumps, the ones like that, you would just have a wall mounted unit, and they'll cover you can buy the room size ones or buy some that do like half the house. You can do a lot of research online. There's a ton of it out there, but I would switch to that, especially long term.
Yeah, well, Lori, I had the same problem, and not with the boiler, but with the electric baseboard heat. And years ago, Bill told me to look into mini splits, and it was life-changing and certainly lowered our electric bill a lot. And that's a way to use electric heat efficiently. I mean, we've talked a lot about the fact that we're using electricity for space heaters or different kinds of things. We know that natural gas prices are going up. Propane prices are going up. Electric heat can be efficient. You're not trying to say that that's the wrong way to go, right?
Oh, no. I love electric heat, because the heat pumps and that, they're so much more efficient. It's like geothermal, heating, cooling, where you're pulling the heat out of the ground. They're so much more efficient than gas.
Yeah.
You're getting, like I say, it's hard for a person to realize, how do you get 200 to 300% efficiency out of something? It's like a perpetual motion is what it always seemed to me like in my head, but it's just through a course of refrigeration, like your refrigerator, only in reverse. They're much more efficient, and the cost is coming down drastically on those. And the projects we're working on the ones I work on a lot of times with the state, there's a lot of requirements to have electric heating because we're trying to get rid of, fossil fuels, not so much for anything other than a lot of times just indoor air quality.
All right.
And to be able to switch over to, solar or something like that.
All right, let's go back to some more questions. This is from Brian. I have a large old house that gets very dry, 3,200 square feet, built in 1877, baseboard radiator heat, no AC unit. We've considered putting in a whole house humidifier. Which floor is best for this, and do you recommend them?
You know, whole house humidifiers are really good as long as a professional installs those. That's definitely not a do-it-yourself project. Because, you know, an older home like that, a lot of times they don't have a good ductwork system, you know, an air delivery system in them. The very poor design when you are looking at new equipment, you know, and when you're talking about whole house, you know, humidifiers, that humid air or that, you know, basically adjusted air has to get to, you know, all these rooms and to be even for it to be affected. So you're going to utilize the ductwork that's already there. You know, you tie it into the heating and cooling system. But, you know, and that's our problem is the ductwork systems in these older homes. And that's where, you know, there's smaller ductwork type systems that are out there, you know, like maybe even, you know, like 4-inch diameter retrofit type systems that some heating and cooling people specifically do that type of design on older homes where they don't have an efficient ductwork system. And they may just go ahead and do a small system of delivery specifically for your, you know, humidified type air, or, you know, and you can tie that into humidified and filtered at the same time. So you may be able to do two things that your old heating and cooling system can't do. But like I say, those really take someone that really understands the building science and pressures and things like that, roadblocks you run into an old building like that.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Wilbur's on the line in Sioux City. Hi, Wilbur.
Say, Bill.
Yeah.
I think they're called Mr. Heaters. They go on top of a 20-gallon propane tank.
Yep.
I want to use it in my unheated garage. What do you say?
You know, I was just reading about it, and those are the ones they said you could use in the garage. I think that's the one. It's not as cool looking as the ones you carry. I know they look like a briefcase kind of, but yeah, that one is pretty good as long as you have some fresh air in there and you don't have any, you know, anything for like fumes or gases or anything like that. A lot of people use those for garages, but there again, you just got to be, you know, just always be thinking about the carbon monoxide and combustion air and that. But yeah, the one that sits on top of that 20-pound cylinder, I've seen those quite a bit on, you know, different magazine articles and things that I like to read all the time. And everybody's really happy with those. They really are. Not the one that's shaped like a, you know, a sunflower. That one that's it's like a steel frame with a orange glow to it, about a round orange glow. Not that one. That's the one that you don't want.
All right, Wilbur, thanks a lot for the call. Howard's up next in Des Moines. Hi, Howard.
Hi there. Hopefully you can hear me okay in my car on Bluetooth.
Yep.
Question, old home. Office in the basement, working remotely, feet get cold, legs get cold. So I've been running a small space heater with a little fan in it. I know those aren't your favorite, but you got to do it. Stay
yeah.
warm. Going to be getting a new one. And a lot of them that are out there today tout that they're ceramic or they have a ceramic element. And I didn't.
Yeah.
Nobody ever tells you the difference between the, I guess, what, a wire element versus a ceramic element? You know, what's the difference and what should I be looking for?
Well, you know, all I've ever read is they are a lot better than the wire element, you know, as far as radiant heat. So, you know, I just do a little bit more research on that particular brand. Have you tried the, I know a lot of people have gone to that. It's kind of like a foot pad that radiant heat, that you put your feet on, and it's about 2 foot by 2 foot. And it looks like just a big thick heating pad that you'd put on, you know, your sore knees or something. A lot of people have been going to that because it just warms your legs up. And then you get all your comfort there. That might be, you know, for your situation might be something to look at, but the ceramic heaters though, they're still, you're really going to notice, you know, a bill change They do, you know, I think they're expensive to run. But the thing is, you know, you're still at home and you're still comfortable. And if it's electric, at least it's safe. So,
right, right.
You know, well, you're just going to have to suffer with the. What was that?
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, yeah. I do have one with a thermostat on it, and I try to keep it set a little lower, but just got to have a little something to take the edge off. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jimmy Carter would say just put on a sweater and a blanket so you'd be okay.
we've all been there, Howard. Thanks a lot for the call.
We all have, yep.
866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Nancy in Cedar Rapids says, I have a space heater that looks like a radiator, and I use it in a drafty Four Seasons room. There are heat ducts in the room, but they don't heat the room adequately. Are there other space heaters that work better? And I know you're not going to recommend specific brands, Bill, but is there anything that you want to tell her about finding something that maybe is more efficient? I mean, that sounds like a space that would be great for a mini split, right?
It would. If it's fairly large, it would be a good place. The other thing to look at, though, is you can, you know, since it's a ductwork issue, you can get duct heaters. They mount right in the ductwork. If you can have access to it, that may work for you as well. So that would kind of boost the heat that's coming into those areas and give you the heat you need.
Tell
that's
me a
another
little bit
option.
More about that. What it's like a space heater that goes in the duct?
It's just a little electric heater, yeah, that goes into the duct. And, they're just called duct heaters, inline duct heaters. And, you know, they're electric. And basically, as the air goes through the ductwork, it kind of runs out of its heat energy, and then it goes through this thing, and it heats it back up again. And so then you've got warm air coming out of your ductwork into that room. Hmm. You know, you want to pencil that out, and that may work as well. I'd either do that or the heat pump mini split.
All right. Let's go back to the phones now. Deborah's on the line in Hampton. Hello, Deborah.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
We have an older home built in the 1940s, and it has wooden floors in most of it, and they're very cold and drafty. And my question is, we have unfinished basement, just a regular block basement. If we could use some type of insulation on those floor joists to help warm the floor, would it be a batting insulation, maybe insulation with a facing? What would you suggest?
Well, normally they don't recommend doing that. You're better off insulating the basement walls if you can. Insulating those with foam, like foam sheets, foam like 4x8 sheets. Put at least 2 inches of foam on those walls, and then put some framing. The one thing that happens sometimes when you just insulate, you know, say that underneath the floor away from the basement, is the basement may cool off some to where it's not really, you know, comfortable there. But also sometimes that affects here, you're insulating some of the heat that may be coming from your basement and going up, and it kind of throws your whole dynamics off, you know, that. It all comes down to how your heating and cooling system is designed. This is a case where, again, I'd bring in a person, you know, you need to have your heating and cooling, you know, checked every year anyway, you know, to make sure everything's operating correctly and the proper filters are in there. But I would ask them, you know, how is this going to affect the dynamics of the whole house as far as this floor now being, let's say we keep it at 70 degrees, but now the basement's at 50. You know, are we going to have possibly some condensation issues somewhere or comfort issues? Because the ductwork may still be in the basement. So as the ductwork goes through that cool space and then it comes up where it's warm, you know, there's always some issues when we start tweaking with these older homes. So it's usually the best thing to do is make the outside enclosure, which would be your basement walls, your outside walls, and your ceiling, and, you know, on your top floor, you know, to make that basically your thermal enclosure, and not try to break the house up and make it into smaller thermal zones or heating and cooling zones. You know, I would rather that you go ahead and try to include that basement into the heating and cooling space.
All right, Deborah, thanks a lot for the call. We'll get a couple of other quick questions in here from Lynn. Do you have an opinion about direct vent gas stoves for four-season room heat? Bill, can you hear me?
Oh, do I? Oh, I thought you were asking. No. I didn't mean, this is going to be good. Sorry.
All right. Yeah. Do you have an opinion from Lynn?
This is great. You bet I got an opinion.
All right. Direct vent gas stoves for four-season room heat. What do you think?
Yeah, they're fine as long as they're direct vent. I mean, I don't have any problem at all with gas as long as it's, you know, the direct vent or powered vent. As long as it's not natural, you know, draft type vent, you know, you want a good sealed combustion. Yeah, there's no problem at all. What happens usually though is it's hard to find a gas furnace sealed combustion small enough to do like even a small house, energy efficient house. We're having problems finding those because they're just too big even for those. But there's no problem with that, huh?
All right. Marie says we're converting a wood fireplace to gas. Do you have a strong opinion on installing gas logs, which is easier and less costly versus installing a contained system that sends heat into the room?
Yeah, if there's any chance for any of the combustion gases to get into the house from this retrofit, I don't like them at all. I just don't want an open flame inside the house. Basically is what you have, and especially if it's gas, you're going to get carbon monoxide coming in there, and nitrous oxide, all kinds of issues, extra moisture. And I tell you, when you really notice it is, let's say you have that thing running at Christmas or a holiday season, and you've got a whole bunch of people in there in the room, and I don't know how the thing was installed. You know, you may even have an issue with enough oxygen in some cases. So I really don't care for those at all. I'm just, if you're going to use gas for anything, I think it's always best to be a sealed combustion, not allowed flame or the gases to ever get into the living space.
All right. And final question, very quickly from Patty, how often do I need my ductwork blown out?
Well, you know, not that often. It depends on, your filter system. If you're keeping up on your filters, a lot of people go years and years. It just depends on how good you are. You know, okay, there we go. Like with me, I probably should be doing mine about every other year. But,
all right.
Just have somebody take a look at your ductwork when they come and service it.
All right. We are out of time, Bill, but thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yep. Sorry for the glitches.
Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally. This is Talk of Iowa.